B-Pod Studios.
These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
This may feel strong, but you people are stupid.
OMG. It's Felger and Maz, 95 The Sports Hub.
All right, folks, final hour, Felger and Maz on the 10-year anniversary, but it's the regular. This is not an anniversary hour. But we can circle back to some of the stuff if you want. I don't know if anyone's taking calls all day on any show. I don't think they have. So if you have anything you heard over the course of the day that you want to weigh in, you can. 617-779-0985. I had a quick follow-up on the Deflategate discussion that we had before. But I first want to just get, again, this Gronkowski piece of news out on the table. What happened, McCarthy?
All right, so apparently Gronkowski or his people sent out a press release saying that he will, quote, unveil his next chapter in a press conference 2 weeks from today in New York City, August 27th.
2 weeks from today?
That's right.
All right, so I want to get that clear. He's going to unveil his plans 2 weeks from today.
Yes.
And this was put out by his, like, the Rosenhauses?
I'm going to try and find out where it came from. I know a press release was sent out.
Sent out by who?
I'm going to try and find that out.
Yeah, I'm reading from Pro Football Talk here. At an invitation-only event held in New York City, Gronk will unveil his next chapter. Given that both the email and accompanying graphic use the term chapter, there's a chance Gronkowski has authored or at least co-authored another book.
Oh, that's easily what it could be. Oh, that's easy what it could be. Jimmy, what are your sources on the ground in the wrestling world saying?
I know WWE wants him.
Okay. So if it's something like this, like, again, so if it was for wrestling, they couldn't hold it for 2 weeks. If it was for anything, they couldn't hold it for 2 weeks. That's some sort of book, some sort of stupid nothing. This is a stupid nothing.
Yeah, it feels like it's going to be. Why New York? Is it going to be on like one of these goofy morning shows with Hoda and the rest
of them? YouTube reality series. That'll be my prediction for the Gronks.
Yeah, something like that. This feels like I'm sorry. Say that again. A reality series.
YouTube reality series for the Gronks. That's my prediction. That's not informed or anything like that.
Can he still play football and do a YouTube reality series?
Of course he can. He can be back at Thanksgiving.
Yeah. So I was ready to say that this sort of thing rules out him coming back, but it probably doesn't.
Yeah, he has until week 13.
So, like, wrestling, I think, would rule him out.
Yep.
Right? I mean, you can't go on the wrestling circuit and go on tour and start bouncing around mats with 300-pound steroidal. You know, I mean, not that you don't do that in NFL, circles either. But you know what I mean. I think if he joined WWE,
Patriots wouldn't want him doing that.
If he joined wrestling, I'd rule him out from football. But a YouTube reality show? Let's bring the cameras along.
Right. You know, like a dating show with him and his brothers, Gronks in Paradise or something like that. Like, I wouldn't put that past them.
Do you think he's coming back, Murray?
No, I think he's done.
Okay, why? But it's independent of this.
Yeah, and it's not just that he's lost weight and looks like a completely different guy compared to his playing weight. I think he hit the realization he doesn't want to take the abuse on his body anymore. He's had, what, 4 back surgeries since he was in college? Like, he's one hit away. He's truly one guy you can say he's one bad hit or fallen his head away from, you know, needing a ramp to get into his house. And I think he's realized that, and he wants to enjoy his life in other ways now.
Okay.
I don't blame him.
So we'll follow that Gronkowski thing. On the Deflategate thing, I just want to point out that, you know, I told you two things, you know, are clear now, that the dust has settled 4 years later. We spent so much time on it and so much of our energy on it. You know, the fact they obviously did it is one. But the thing that obviously had no impact on them, that when you look at, you know, everything, the wins, the losses, Brady's production, the fumbles was a big thing I was following. I wanted to see a 5-year sample of fumbles going into Deflategate, 5-year sample of fumbles coming out of it. Well, they've got a year to go on that 5-year sample, but they're way ahead. They fumbled less. So they don't hold on to the ball any better or worse. Brady's not any better or worse. The ball had zero impact on how they played. Zero. Which is another way to say, like, why would you put yourself at risk like that and put yourself through that when it was just a mental hang-up?
Yeah, that's
that
what
you
it was.
Had
or... I think it was. It was a comfort thing for Brady more than anything else.
So, but I think it's important that you've won since then. When we came on there in 2009, and people forget this, but it was a big thing at the time. In 2009 and around that time, you heard a lot of the people who want to dig on the Patriots say, you haven't won since Spygate. You haven't, and, you know, as every year built forward and you didn't win since Spygate, even if you'd go deep and even if you go to a Super Bowl and lose or conference title game or win 14 games like in 2010, you'd always hear that. You haven't won anything since Spygate. Now, that's the Spygate one, which was 2007. Winning since Deflategate. Now, if you had added Deflategate on top of it.
Oh, God.
And you hadn't had that goal line stand against Seattle if Malcolm Butler hadn't done this thing, or if he hadn't come back against the Falcons, you know, whether it had merit or not, you know, if you just lost a close game, even still, you'd have people who'd be able to say you haven't won since these things, and that thing would hang on you. And the Spygate thing hung on him for a while. You heard people say it. What have you won since Spygate?
10 years, Mike. It took them 10 years to win. I mean, from 04 to 14, and that was one of the big reasons why I picked that 14 Super Bowl and that 14 title run as my favorite of the last 10 years, because it was the most important. They hadn't been able to recreate that magic. Everybody could say, you haven't won since Spygate, haven't won since Spygate. Then they won one. It was huge. And then they've won two since Deflategate. It's been absolutely huge.
So it's like now those things are just sidebars as opposed to the narrative, which is like legacy defining, massively important, I think, for them.
Definitely.
I mean, even the biggest hater, they can say, well, they cheated. They pushed the rules. They did this. They did that. But then in the next breath, you have to say, and it made no difference. And it made no difference is a big thing.
Yes.
That's a big thing to have going for you.
And otherwise, if they don't win from 14 on, yeah, we're talking about the legacy taking a hit, at least from a national perspective.
So I started the show and we did a lot of the first hour about, you know, the superlatives over the our decade here on the air. And again, it's been a ridiculous run in that these 10 years that we've been on the air were better than the 10 years that preceded us. From 2000 to 2009, and now there's a year less that I'm working with that earlier sample, so work with me. But from 2000 to 2009, Boston won 6 championships, right? You had the 3 with the Patriots. Yep. You had the 2 with the Red Sox. You had the 1 with the Celtics. You won 6 titles. You went to the finals in the various sports 7 times, and you went to the conference finals in your sports 11 times. Since we've been on the air, 2009 to now, you also won 6 titles, 3 for the Patriots. Bruins had 1. Sox have a couple. You've been to the finals 11 times and the conference finals 17 times. So this 10 years was better than the last 10 years.
Without question. There's more of a collective dominance, I feel like, between the 4 major sports. And, you know, granted, the Celtics were able to win one in 08, but, you know, they've been, I think, more of a viable product here for over a sustainable period from 2010 or 2009 to now. And you have the Bruins, too, because outside of, I don't know, look, or especially those early aughts, I mean, they were awful, absolutely awful.
So what happens in the third decade? They can't. Are they going to win 6 championships and go to 17 conference championships?
No, that's probably unrealistic.
But they should be. Who should
They'll
suck?
They'll all be competitive.
There's no excuse for any of them to suck. Because if there was a disaster owner situation in here, like, you know, the Patriots previous to the Crafts, right, you'd say, okay, they'd be in trouble. Or
Yawkey Trust, and not that was a total disaster, but a completely different situation than we're accustomed to.
Or if Jacobs didn't have, you know, the old Jacobs regime where they, you know, were really cheap. I don't know. I just feel like between the pressure we put on them and the ownership, I don't know.
That Bruins core is aging, though. You know, so, okay, they still will be pretty good here in the next few years, but how about when you get into that second half?
They definitely worry me the most. Mm-hmm. I think the Sox would have a couple down years, but I think they're in a cycle where
the standard's too high for them. They've set themselves as one of like the marquee franchises that has untold amounts of money. It's them, the Yankees. They're always going to be competitive. They'll have a few down years here and there, but they'll always bounce back.
And the nature of baseball, you don't need, it's not about your core. You can just create a new core.
Right.
Because you're the Red Sox, you can go out and spend $250 million. It's not like hockey or, finding a superstar in basketball or even football, finding the quarterback. They should always be able to compete.
Okay, so I asked you some things about the last 10 years. I just want to finish because the answers. And mm-hmm. Just real quick, you don't have to explain, but just give me the answer. What was your favorite title run of the last 10 years, Murray?
Favorite title run collective? That's 2014 Patriots, without question.
Likewise, 2014 Pats.
Okay, mine is 2011 Bruins, and I'm not, again, just to qualify, that doesn't mean it was more important than 2014. My favorite, personal favorite. I'm a hockey guy. I got a little Bruins fan thing in me, so 2011 to me was my favorite. The Patriots in 2014, much more important and much more significant to Boston. You're not going to hear me say otherwise. What was your single most disappointing team? What team did you like the least, your least favorite team?
I said it earlier, it's just personal. It's the 2010 Patriots, 14-2, Brady MVP, and to lose to the Jets in the divisional round that first playoff game was, it just cut me deep.
There's no other answer than the 2011 Red Sox, maybe the biggest disgrace in the history of Boston sports, or right up there. No, really. I mean, really, you think that's strong? It's really not. Put yourself back in that point. They ran out the greatest manager in the history of the franchise. They ran out the greatest general manager in the history of the franchise. They slandered everybody. You know, John Henry had to come in here and defend, you know, his organization for an hour. Put yourself back in that spot. It was a complete disaster and a complete disgrace.
Okay,
I'm sorry, a quick addendum to this, because there's a difference between disappointed and hate. Hate for me is the 2012 Red Sox.
I
162, I rooted against them every game.
Is that the Bobby Valentine?
Yep, yes. I hated that team.
Oh.
Okay, so the most disgusting team was the 2011 Red Sox, followed closely by this last Celtics team, the 2018-19 Boston Celtics.
We're dealing with 13 pitchers.
Thank you, Bobby.
This is a great organization with a great team.
Who was the worst coach / manager of the last 10 years?
This a-hole.
Oh, yeah.
I said, hey, how you doing? That's great.
Just very, very well, Bobby. Thank you.
Without question, it's Bobby Valentine. As brash and confident as he was incompetent and arrogant. I hated him with the Mets. I hated him here. It's one of the worst hires, not just in Red Sox history, in Boston sports history.
I have no idea.
They bring in that a-hole after they run Terry Francona off with that hit piece in the Globe. That guy? Are you kidding me?
I'm not the monster that breathes fire.
Who's the second worst?
Oh,
thanks, Mike.
No problem, Bobby. I'll move to number two now.
Maybe Johnny Swordsman?
John Farrell. John Farrell.
I mean, they did win a title with the guy, though.
I think we have five number ones.
Thank you, John.
So he was a boob.
Worst / coach manager.
110 individual events inside of a game.
Of the last 10 years is Bobby Valentine. Number two is John Farrell.
Not an Apple Watch.
One of them won a World Series. Okay, but fine. Those two legitimately sucked.
Chris Young needs the at-bats.
Thank you, John. You know what's amazing? There really is no number three.
Confident and strong.
I'm surprised you don't want to make a case for Claude.
Doc was great. Brad is good.
We've had some guys come out with some cramps.
We didn't even have to discuss Bill. And Claude won a cup and is a good coach.
Fresh and powerful.
He's overrated. I mean, overrated doesn't mean you suck.
And Brad Stevens is overrated, ultimately.
Maybe, but they're qualified good coaches.
When he impacted the ground.
That's my favorite one.
Are we going to go another 10 years? We only have, you know, I mean, Farrell was bad, but he won a World Series. We only have one real incompetent in Bobby Valentine?
Yeah, Addison, certainly that closer B.
Well, let's see what happens with Alex Cora, because I don't know, it's not been a good year for him, and some of the stuff that he says is
in terms of shape to his secondary pitches?
Okay,
I don't want to say it's John Farrelly, but it's getting pretty delusional as of late.
Quickly, it's our single most favorite game. Our most important favorite game was the 2014 Super Bowl over the Seahawks.
Yeah, but okay. Because I was there, I say the 28-3 comeback against the Falcons.
Okay, what was your single most disappointing game for you?
Ultimately, it's Game 7 against St. Louis, the Stanley Cup Final. The Bruins lost to the St. Louis Blues this time around. I mean, that was, for this core, Marchand, Chara, Krejci, Bergeron, like for them, they should have, based on their talent level, Mike, you know, they should have another cup. This was their opportunity. The seas parted in the East. This was a upstart Blues team, and to get to Game 7 at home, and it's over in, if we're being completely honest, 10 minutes. And you know it was, that game was over after the first period. And so, yeah, boo, boo, shame on me. I left after the second period. I'm the only one that got it. I'm glad I left. That was embarrassing. That's the worst loss.
So you think the Bruins Game 7 versus the Blues was worse than the Eagles Super Bowl?
Yep.
Me too. Agreed. I agree.
I'll take the Eagles Super Bowl. And again, put yourself back in that position. I didn't think the Patriots were going to get back there again. Of course, I was proven wrong. I'm glad I was proven wrong. The way they lost, though, Tom Brady doing literally everything he possibly could to win that game, and Bill Belichick and Malcolm Butler and that defense ripping a Lombardi Trophy away from it. Oh, that devastated me. That crushed me.
Devastating and garbage, and it hurt. But you know what? At least it was competitive. Unlike that Game 7, complete no-show by the Boston Bruins against the St. Louis Blues.
Okay. Uh-huh. Finally, thank you, Bobby. I asked you earlier your favorite and least favorite non-sports-related, non-game-related sports story of the last 10 years, and the answer to all of that is Deflategate, the best and the worst, all wrapped into one. That's going to conclude everything that I was asking and they were answering. I promise your calls right after this on everything we discussed.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Okay, phones as promised. Cam and Taunton, what do you got for us today, Cam?
Guys, first of all, congratulations. I mean, it's been incredible. But first of all, I want to thank you guys for one thing. You guys came in here and said, we're going to talk Bruins and we're going to take it seriously. You said that from the very beginning. And a month after you came on the air, the Kessel trade happened. They were playing in the Classic. They blew the lead to Philly. And the next year, they won the Cup. And I think that there's just something different about a hockey run. Well, I mean, football is a month and it's three games. Baseball, it's just baseball. The nature of the sport is slow. A hockey run is a two-month investment of 20-plus games. And, you know, 2 years into your run, they win the Cup. I think, to me, that was the most special championship of this run for that very reason, like you, Mike. And I think that's why this past loss was just so absolutely devastating. So thank you for taking hockey seriously and giving Bruins fans a place to talk.
Okay, babe. Gut punch lost. It really left a mark.
I agree with everything that he said. It is. There is more of a emotional investment. If you go to the game, it's more of a time investment. Look, us personally, it was a lot of an investment this time around, traveling to St. Louis and everything. So behind my 2014 Patriots run, behind that is 2011 Bruins. It is. That was unbelievable. And that's why this one hurt so bad. That was such a letdown. They shouldn't have lost that game at home.
Cups in the building.
Oh, my God.
It's
after all of that, it just ultimately felt like what a waste of time. Everything, the seas parted for you. You didn't have to face the Capitals. You didn't have to face Crosby and the Penguins. You didn't get Tampa. It was set up for you. And they lost Game 7 to the St. Louis Blues, who probably won't even make the Stanley Cup playoff next year. Like, it's that makes me sick.
But the hockey is something that the station should be proud of. And the show, I mean, it's one of the things that I'm proud of that we did. And it's not that we were the first to do it, because... you know, Touch and Rich say this all the time. Fred and those guys were doing hockey for a while, but they were doing it. So we were the first to do it, like, really in a sports radio context, you know. Opinion, call, debate, you know, commercial, come back and do it again. Should they trade him? Should they not trade him? And take calls, debate it, come back, do it again, like in a sports radio context, right? Like, we were the first to really treat it like the other teams, which means we criticize them. Meaning we dug in on them.
Yeah, hold their feet to the fire.
And all that. And so, you know.
You don't even get that. And I think that's very unique to this market, too, and that, like, some of the other big serious sports shows, like Francesa, like, he refuses to talk hockey. He hates it.
So when we first started, I wasn't sure that it would work. Because the way it had been treated at EEI, like, I thought maybe they did that for a reason. Because you couldn't get ratings talking about it. So, I mean, I didn't really know.
Right.
I didn't really know. And so... we decided that we would do it and treat it like just another team. And if the ratings were there, great. We'd do it. And if they weren't, then you couldn't do it. Then I wasn't going to do it either. I mean, that's just stupid.
Yeah, you got to protect the bottom line. But I think, I don't know, you've been here long enough. You know, all the kids, you know, people that are taking their kids to getting ice time at the ridiculous times in the morning. And this is a hockey hotbed. People care about the sport here.
Bruins are a great talk radio topic. Not that they have a huge broad support. Like, it's not hugely popular still. It's still more of a niche sport.
But those that do, they're
passionate.
They're not just that. They love it. They're passionate. They also sound like Boston. Like, I like the Bruins caller. They sound like they're from here. They sound like they care. Like, all that. I think that's important. And I think whether you're a hockey fan or not, I don't know, and I can't speak for you. So if you don't like hockey, maybe you don't feel this way. But to me, that's what talk – when we talk Bruins, that's what talk radio should sound like. It sounds local and passionate, and you care. And so, you know, that's something I'm really glad about. Just from a selfish standpoint, because I love the sport and you can talk it. Here's John in Milford on a Patriots item. Go ahead, John.
Hey, what's up, guys? Great 10 years. Here's to many more. But, you know, one thing that really got you guys going was that you went against the grain, especially with the Patriots. And that really came to light with the 4th-and-2 call that first year you guys were on the air. You being critical of them and starting the whole Brady in decline, poking fun at the In Bill We Trust, you know, with that call on 4th-and-2 against the Colts, it was opposite of what we've heard for years on sports talk.
Okay, maybe that was it. Who knows? But the I was going through it before. Like, how many epic games we've had to talk about over the years? I mean, it's just absurd. The number of big games. And like,
which team?
Okay.
I mean, there's so many choices with any of these teams.
So even just the Patriots. So you've had all those. And this is just when we've been on the air. I'm not even going back to the last decade.
Sure.
Just since we've been on the air. And you've had all these incredible wins. That, you know, the Seattle win, the Atlanta win, the ho-hum, you know, just another championship win over the Rams. But in the midst of all that, I mean, like, just our first 5 years on the air. This is how their seasons end. Seasons ended. 2009, an absolute train wreck, wild card, blowout loss at home. Remember that
game?
Down
21-0 before I even reached my seat that day, Mike.
I mean, the next year, 2010, they're 14-2, and they lose at home to the Jets.
The low moment of the dynasty. those two right there. I mean, that was rock bottom.
That 09 team was bad, though. You shouldn't get your ass kicked like that, but that was a bad team. 2010, lost like that to the Rex Ryan, Mark Sanchez Jets. I mean, that game was god-awful. It took years off my life.
2011, you lose the Super Bowl. Wes Welker can't catch the ball.
Ugh.
I mean, you did the most with what you had that year, and not calling that year a failure or anything, but that's a gut punch lost. Mm. I mean, that didn't feel good. The next year, 2012, you come home and lose at home in the AFC title game to Baltimore.
They got killed in the second half.
Got controlled. You know, weren't even really that close. And then the next year, you go out to Denver and lose in the AFC title game, in which you really weren't that close.
Yeah. That one's maybe the biggest waste of time game in the dynasty.
So think of that. The first 5 years that were on the air, they were still a great team and all of that, but home loss Baltimore, home loss Jets, Super Bowl loss, can't catch the ball, Wes Welker, home loss Baltimore, AFC title game. Like, that's sort of a tough run when you think about
that
it.
Game in Denver. I think the first play from scrimmage was a bomb to Matthew Slater,
yes.
And that's why I was like, this is how this day's going to go. Great.
That's why 14 was so big, Mike.
Yep.
Everything you just laid out. The theme of today, you have to go back and put yourself in that spot because it was a long time ago. It really was. I mean, 5 years ago, with everything that's happened, was a long time ago. Put yourself in that spot. After all those losses you just detailed, after Spygate, with Deflategate happening 2 weeks before, put yourself back there. That's why 14 is the pivotal moment and the crucial moment of the last 10 years.
Second biggest championship in Patriots history.
Easily.
2014.
Yep.
Massive. Massive.
It's 1 and 1A. It's not even second biggest.
Yeah.
It's 0-1 and then 14, 1 and 1A.
Agreed. And then, but just the gut punch losses. Maybe the Bruins fans are used to it. Because really, again, now just since we've gone on the air, I'm not going to even go back to like too many men on the ice or things like that. Peter Klima.
Carolina game 7.
Okay, that was 2008. That was that was 09 season. So that was the spring of 09 just before we came on the air.
Ah.
That was months before we came on the air. But game 7 lost to Carolina at home. Then we came on the air. But just since we've been on the air, if you take out the 2011 cup run and the Leafs,
oh, it's a mess.
Who have they beaten? Seriously, so just for the sake of this, add the Carolina game. Game 7, at home, Carolina, second round, 2009. Loss in overtime. 2010, up 3-0 against Philly in the second round. Up 3-0 in game 7, at home, loss. 2012, year after the cup. Game 7, at home, Washington Capitals, overtime.
Loss.
2013 Cup Final, Game 6, Chicago Blackhawks up by a goal with a minute and a half left.
Ugh.
Loss in regulation. How'd they manage that? 2014, number one seed, President's Trophy winning team, Montreal second round at home, Game 7, loss. 2017, first round, Ottawa at home, Game 6, overtime, loss. You know, if you take out the Toronto Game 7s, they've beaten Toronto three times in Game 7 at home in the playoffs. And 2011 on that incredible run.
Wow, there's that's really putrid.
What do you really left with? It's like they do it to you every year.
Yeah.
It's why that game 7 against the Blues is such a kick in the you-know-what, because you feel like it was their last kick at the can. And, you know, this group, sure, they won it once in 2011. But to your point, Mike, those are a lot of losses. There's a lot of losses on that core. A lot of really bad ones, too. It's so tough.
The President's Trophy year was brutal.
The Bruins just... I love them. I mean it, but they're just kind of a little loserish. They still are. They don't suck,
but they got a stink of letdown on them.
They do. They have a letdown stink.
Why did it screw up?
They really do, and it's painful. It's hard. And this one left a mark. It left a mark on us, buddy boy. And people turned off Felgren Maz after that game 7 loss. Man, I think that one left a mark. And maybe it's just the.
That was the kind of loss. It was like Super Bowl 42, you know, the Tyree helmet catch type of thing. I knew that was coming. I think I told you like a few weeks later. I got took an Uber, and a guy was like a fan of the station. Whenever he's like, I haven't had you guys on since Game 7. I was like, well, you're not the only one, like, because that one hurt.
Yeah.
People were scarred from that loss.
Thanks, Bruins.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, some wrap-up calls here on the 10-year anniversary show and some stuff from today as well. Stephen Providence back to Belichick and his press conference after Deflategate. Yes, Steve.
Oh, I'll tell you, I couldn't believe it when you said you want to talk about Deflategate. But first of all, I got to say, today has just been unbelievable. You guys are great. The clips and everything, the whole day has been fabulous. And the Bruins loss was definitely the worst. Bill Belichick and Tom Brady and Deflategate. I've been wanting to call for a long time because we beat it to death, and you guys said no more Deflategate. But first of all, being a big-time homie, I just can't imagine that Tom Brady would ever cheat. And I happen to love Bill Belichick's press conferences. You know, when you go, we're on to Cincinnati, stuff like that, I love that. But anyway, Bill, I think in some of his press conferences, some of them, and definitely not all of them, he tells you things. You just got to read between the lines. And during Deflategate, he said at one of his press conferences, I don't know if you can find it, he said, we deliver the ball to the refs the way we want them. And to me, I read between the lines, and that said it was up to the refs to check the balls, and they just didn't.
Okay, so there's some of that. There's some of that.
And in Brady's case, based on his really awkward press conference after this whole news broke, I really do think in his mind, he didn't think he was cheating. It was a comfort thing. He liked the balls a certain way. Now, was it probably illegal? Yeah, deep down he knew that, but was it really benefiting him? Mm. For him to say, well, I don't think so.
Not to relitigate it. Jastrzemski to McNally.
Just caught in your web.
Jastrzemski to McNally. McNally says, Tom sucks. I'm going to make the next ball a effing balloon. Jastrzemski, yeah, I talked to him last night. He actually brought you up and said you must have a lot of stress trying to get them done.
You don't think Brady knew what they were doing?
No, he knew. Of course he knew.
Okay, so come on.
That real quick, that stems from the Jets game that year where the balls were found to be 16 PSI. Yeah. I guarantee you he went to Jastrzemski. He's like, come on, guys. Like, you know, do your job. Yeah. Get it done right.
And McNally says, screw you. Where's my money and my kicks? Otherwise, the next one's a watermelon.
No, what I meant
Murray,
was...
Murray, listen to the joy in Felger's voice.
Oh, so good. I love it. I miss it.
There's such joy and passion.
He pulled his Wells Report copy out from under his mattress today where he keeps it for safekeeping.
I think Brady knew he did know... He was committing an equipment violation, but he didn't think it was any big deal because it wasn't truly affecting anything.
Yeah. Well, that's fair.
There was not some grand conspiracy, a directive. He just said, guys, can you make sure it's, you know,
make them the
12
way I like
or whatever. Him. Yeah, exactly. Do what you have to do.
You got to do. Get them the way I like
right.
Him.
Nothing more than that.
Fair enough. That doesn't mean he wasn't doing it, though. Right. But you know, all that, since they've won, it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter
right.
Because... whether you want to hang on to they weren't doing it or were doing it, you can if you want. But it really doesn't matter because they proved more than anything it didn't impact them. That's what the winning has done. That the winning has made it a non-topic. So they push the envelope. But did it help them win? Well, it turns out it didn't. Because they did more winning after the thing than right. Before the thing.
It was moot.
Well, do we know that they're still not doing it?
Oh, I mean, don't do that, Murray. Why are you inviting me to do that? Would you come on?
Because there's joy in your voice.
There's not joy. It's called passion. Mike and Woburn, go, Mike.
Hey, congratulations on 10 years, guys.
Thanks.
Appreciate having a place to talk about Bruins and not have Calliope music playing in the background.
It's a Holly Hockey minute.
Yeah, seriously. And Mike, I would say that Deflategate was great because it actually put the focus on the PSI of the footballs, and the league wasn't allowed to overinflate them anymore, which is why Brady didn't say he would think he was cheating, because he just wanted the balls in the legal range, not at 16 like in the Jets game, which is the only game that we have actual proof on a text that of the ball's PSI. That being said, and also, the Patriots are better since Deflategate and before Deflategate. Funny, Tom Brady did look like some games like he couldn't hold on to the ball and couldn't throw him. Funny how it is, huh, Mikey?
Well, that's the most important thing. Like I said, that's what makes the conversation moot. I mean, really, because they reinflated the balls, they took away the cameras, and you've won 3 out of 5 and, you know, all that. Like, that's what makes that.
And that's why I couldn't understand why people were so mad after the 28-3 comeback. In a year that they suspended Brady, ultimately got him for the 4 games, you won. They still tried to clip you. They did for 4 games, and you still won. You won. Like, why are you still mad about all of this? Like, I don't understand it. Like, you're still so scorned and angry about, ooh, they were out to get us. You did it. You did it. It was an equipment violation. They came down heavy-handed on you. That's all. Like, you won. You won in spite of all that.
Okay, so I just want to, before we're going to take the last break for the final word, and in the final word, we'll get to some best of stuff that we didn't quite get to during the course of the show. I do just want to mention, I think it's the most important thing for us, is our ratings. We talk about it very little, but it's a 10-year anniversary, and I just, you know, put it on the record, okay, because we never talk about it. And I think today's the day to do it. It's the thing I'm most proud of because it's hard to put together a track record like we've put together. The last book that we got, you know, a quarterly book was The Spring, and we won it again. It was the 28th consecutive book that Felgren Maz finished first in the market, in the demo. First. And not just beating EEI, but first. So we have won every book, every quarter of every year since the spring of 2012. That is seven straight years. So we're not just the top show or station in the market for seven straight years. We won every book, every quarter of every year for seven straight years and counting. So we're now in the summer of 2019. We'll see if we can keep that streak going. I mentioned before that the Bruins loss hit the Felgren Maz Show ratings-wise, and it has. They also give out monthly ratings as part of the trends. You get a monthly rating. That's not the quarterly. That's not the book. But they give you out a monthly rating. And Felgren Maz in June finished third. We finished behind two music stations. And that's the first time that broke a streak of 59 consecutive months that we had won.
It's crazy.
But we had won. Again, not just beating EEI or whatever. We were number one every month for 59 consecutive months. Now, the way the ratings work is you can lose a month and still win the book. You can lose 2 months and still win the book. It's like a total score soccer match, right? It's like they just average out the 3 months. So the months, you know, in and of themselves really don't matter. But they still do log them. They still do keep them. We still get reports on months. We had won 59, number one, 59 consecutive months until we finished third here in June. And that had compiled seven straight years, every book, 28 straight quarters where we were number one. I don't know if they keep records of that stuff. I don't know who does, but that to me is a major accomplishment. And if this streak gets snapped here in the summer, and it might, it gets snapped. But before it gets snapped, I wanted to put that record. I wanted to put that out there so people
crow
know.
A bit. Come on.
We don't do it very much, but on the 10-year anniversary, we might as well. 28 straight number one finishes. I don't know. Like, that's like...
No, someone call up the NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, and find out. Let them go through the...
Is my guy Maddie do that? He does. Maddie does that with women. Maybe adults. I don't know. But it's that kind of territory. Yeah. It's not like... it's. And so I'm really proud of that. You know, the consistency of it. The consistency of it. That's hard to do. And
we had a really good run with adults 25-54 where we're number one also.
So a lot of those years, 28 straight number one men 25-54. Of those 28, I'd say we were number one in adults in 20-25 of them. Okay, we're most usually number one adults as well, but not every time. Men 25-54, 28 straight. And that's the streak we're working on. It's we got to climb out of it this summer to see if we can get it again. But anyway, on the 10-year anniversary, I just thought I'd mention that and thank everyone who's responsible for it, you know, which is Maz primarily, which is Jimmy Stewart, our executive producer, primarily, which is Billy Lanny, primarily, our director of communications, which is you, Big Jim Murray. Thanks to the guys that made it possible as well. Be Real to start. I'll mention him again because he was with us there day one. Rob Hardy, who puts together all of our most of our production here on the show and has done it for years. Big part of the show. Mike Thomas, program director, most importantly, he put today together as well. This was his baby and a big part of... it was mostly Mike Thomas. So thanks to him and his support over the years and all of that.
Mark Bertrand.
And Mark the Beetle Bertrand. Thank you. I knew I was going to forget someone. Mark the Beetle Bertrand. He did our updates there for the first, whatever, 6-7 years before Big Jim Murray took over in such illustrious fashion. Okay. I'm going to stop patting ourselves on the back and we'll do the final word right after this.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And the final word is brought to you by Town Fair Tire for the guaranteed lowest price on tires. Go to Town Fair Tire because nobody beats Town Fair Tire.
Nobody.
Nobody.
Okay, McCarthy, people like to listen and watch me be hungover at the Super Bowl. I think that's a hit. So here's some of the best of leftover stuff from our 10 years. This is actually from Beetle and Zoe.
Yeah, this is a brilliant thing that Hardy put together of a recap of all the years of being hungover at the Super Bowl.
So what happens? It's not like I'm, you know, hungover every day. We do Super Tuesday. Tuesday is like the big night out, and then Wednesday can be a little rough because I'm old and I've never been able to drink properly, but now I really, really can't drink. So Murray gives me a couple Miller Lights and maybe a little something, and it's like it's a complete bleep show every single year. Go ahead. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the program. Felger and Maserati, Super Bowl 52, Day 3. How you feeling, Mazzy?
Oh, I'm like a peach, fresh as lettuce, as you would say. I feel dynamite. I haven't felt... I'm really warming up to Minneapolis.
Do I sense sarcasm?
A little bit. A little bit of a rough night last night. A little bumpy. Had some turbulence.
Hey, it's Felger here for Ace Ticket. Have you ever stood in line at the Garden worrying about whether your ticket printout would work or whether your phone would die before your mobile ticket scans, or if you're like me, you lost your phone last night because Murray slipped you something in the bar, and now you've lost your phone and you can't get into the game? I want to thank Feldman for putting that together. Why am I blanking on Feldman's first?
Mark Feldman.
Mark Feldman, former producer here at the Hub. He now works with Wiggy on what station is that?
96.9.
Jesus. Okay, so I know. I'm a just. Although I'm an old man.
Well, especially today, you're old.
You two all right?
Been playing hurt all day long.
Some of us more than others.
Playing really hurt all day
Murray's long. Greatest accomplishment ever to this show.
Murray, I say this all the love and respect in my heart. Go screw yourself.
Seriously, though. Yeah, it's the last time I go out with you.
Murray handed me something last night at the lounge, and I'm telling you. I'm just too old for that crap, Murray. I am too old for that crap. Again, I'd like to publicly, I've expressed this privately, publicly I'd like to send my thoughts and prayers to the cleaning crew at the W Hotel in downtown Minneapolis. Again, my thoughts and prayers to you and your family for what you had to go through in my room today. Not pretty.
And while we're on the topic, I would similarly like to express my my thanks to the cleanup crew for the Uber company.
I'm fine.
Thankfully, it was the outside of the vehicle, not the inside of the vehicle.
Oh, my God. Just brutal. Just brutal. But we, here at Felger Maz, we tough it out. Games played is the most important stat there is. And, yes, we still showed up to play today.
I will say that just quickly about Minnesota and Minneapolis, and we talked about the Scandinavian culture here and... You know, the blondes and the blue eyes, that there are some yummy mummies in this mall.
It always goes back to that.
Thank you for that.
It does. It always goes back to
that. Set a watch to Maz's perviness every single time.
So anyway, the Super Tuesday is such a hit that we, Hardy and again, who does our Fuppets, put it to a Fuppets. So here's on the NBC Sports Boston simulcast, and it's a radio play along as well. The Fuppets this last Super Bowl. Real quick, Jim in Manchester. What do you got for me, Jim?
Hey, how much did you drink last night?
If you saw how much I drank, you would be... What makes my condition day so embarrassing is how little I drank. That's the story.
I would agree.
It's not that lightweight. Not the way I feel today, which is clownish. My hangover is almost clownish in its intensity. I feel like absolute ass.
Oh, you look worse.
If you saw what I drank, just a couple Miller Lights.
You can't mix, especially past age 35. You can't go beers. Now I'm going to have brown liquor.
I'm going to have brown liquor, brown liquor.
One brew.
I'm going to have brown liquor, brown liquor.
One sky.
Now I'll go back to beers.
One beer.
And then all of a sudden, you're a complete disaster.
You jackass.
You're going to pound beers all night and then switch to liquor and think you're going to survive it?
We're playing a little hurt.
I thought you were from Wisconsin.
No,
that's all you people do out there.
I know,
there.
But I've never been able to do it. I can't drink. It's pathetic. All right, one more thing. Jimmy calls this the greatest commercial read in the history of the station?
Yeah, it is for me, too. Jimmy and I we've loved this since this happened. I remember when I heard it. I was sitting in here, but I was like, this is awesome, but you're also having a stroke, because like, this was supposed to be a 60-second commercial read, and then it's just...
2 minutes, 34 seconds of pure commercial brilliance.
Okay.
The most honest ad read I've ever heard in my life.
I'm supposed to be promoting this product.
Yeah.
I don't personally like the product, and they had just been rung up by the Better Business Bureau.
Correct.
Okay, so they were proven to be screwing around. They weren't on the up and up. I don't really like the thing. And I told the sales rep this. I said, I don't even like the thing. And they were just about to be indicted by the feds for fraud or whatever. Like, I shouldn't be reading this. He's like, just go ahead. We don't care. Go ahead. So, all right, I'm not going to lie. And so this is what happened. Go ahead.
All right, it's Felger here from MyPillow. A couple things about MyPillow. You may have heard this elsewhere. MyPillow was just downgraded by the Better Business Bureau. They were given an F. They were given an F by the Better Business Bureau because they did not like the way they were promoting and the offers given for MyPillow, which we have been telling you about for months, which is still on the table. Like, for example, in my read right here, it says that the current offer that we've been offering you has been extended into the new year. So take advantage now while you still have time. And the Better Business Bureau looked at that and said, well, you know, that's not fair because you're telling them it's a limited time offer when it's not. So they downgraded them from an A range to an F. So that is why MyPillow was downgraded. They're not downgraded for their actual pillow, which remains the same. Now, let me tell you about the pillow. Some people love this thing. Some people hate it, which is why I was sort of reluctant to keep doing the reads between the BBB thing and the pillow. I was reluctant to keep doing it, but they said just tell the truth about how you feel about the pillow. So here's how I feel about the pillow. Some people love it. Some people really don't. My father loves it. A lawyer that I work with loves it. Other people, not so much. They're like, Felger, why'd you tell me about that pillow? So they used to say this about the Grateful Dead. Some people like licorice. They used to say this. That when it comes to the dead, it's like licorice. Not many people like licorice, but people who like licorice really like licorice. Does that make sense? So maybe my pillow is like licorice. If you like it, you love it. But you may not like it. Okay? So those are the two things that I got to tell you about my pillow. Here's the deal. It's still a great deal. It's such a great deal. The government hates it. It's such a great deal. The Better Business Bureau gave MyPillow an F. This deal is so good, and it's still on the table. It's unbelievable. They tell them to take it off the table, but they won't, which is why they gave them an F. Here's the offer. Buy one premium MyPillow, and you'll get a second premium MyPillow for free, plus two go-anywhere pillows. So that's four pillows for the price of one, or buy one, get three free. The government hates that offer. And maybe you'll hate the pillow. Maybe you'll love it. I don't know. But if you don't like it, you can send it back with a full money-back guarantee until March 1st. And I know that's not everyone does that. Who's going to go through the trouble of sending the pillow back? So you may not. But if you want to go through the trouble of sending the pillow back and you don't like it, if you're one of the people that doesn't like it, you don't like licorice, send it back for a full money-back guarantee. All right. So that's that. The way you get that offer is to go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code Felger, F-E-L-G-E-R. If you still want that offer that got them an F, go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code Felger, F-E-L-G-E-R.
The manifesto from the Unabomber is less long and less nuts than that. You can hear me cackling faintly in the background because I remember at one point looking up at like the minute and a half mark, like, what's happening? Why are you still talking about this thing?
I'll tell you why. I was flabbergasted that they told me just to go ahead and still do it. Just tell you how you, like, what? I swear to God, this is true, McCarthy. Because I get so many free my pillows, they're all over my house. Like, they're just all over. So we put them all in the guest bedrooms. And my mother-in-law slept on the my pillow. She woke up, came down to the kitchen the next morning. My mother-in-law said, are you trying to kill me with that pillow? What'd you do with that pillow? Why'd you give me that pillow? So anyway.
I'd never heard that. That's the highlight of the day. I thought the Henry thing was going to be the highlight of the day. That is the highlight of the 10 years.
As a man having an emotional meltdown.
I think the offer is still on the table 2.5 years later.
For a limited time only.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.